Welcome to the Talent Smart Podcast. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who will offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We want to explore how technology and business can improve and enhance the world. We're always keen to hear from you and let us know what topics you'd like to hear us cover in future episodes. Also, if you'd like to take part, please let us know. We're always looking for interesting and inspiring people to interview. Speak soon. Hi, everyone. Thank you and welcome back again. I'm delighted today to be joined by Alexandra Moussavizadeh. She is the CEO of Evident. Now, Evident are an intelligence platform that specializes in benchmarking and tracking AI adoption across the banking sector in particular. But I know AI is a hot topic right now, and they published the annual Evident AI Index. It's the global standard benchmark for AI maturity for banks. So, Alexandra, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining.
Philip, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a joy, and I really appreciate you giving me some time. I know how busy you are. I know how in demand you are. I know how in demand the AI topic is, and you must be running from place to place right now. So, I guess let's get started. Can you tell us a little bit more about Evident? What is it you do, and why does it matter? Why is it important? Over to you.
Thank you so much, Philip. Well, and thank you for having me on today. So we set up Evident just a little over 2 years ago, where we were coming from. My background is in index creation. Right. I've spent my whole life building indices. I'm an economist and mathematician by training. Spent some years at Moody's, but also at Morgan Stanley, which is essentially sort of index creation and looking at data to assess, in that instance, there's a probability of default by nations and companies. Set up the Global AI Index back in 2019 when I was head of intelligence for Tortoise Media. It was a request by a couple of governments that had expressed an interest in understanding how they might better monitor and track the strength of their AI ecosystems, their national AI ecosystems. Right. So we built this in 2018 and it released it in 2019 with 70 countries that had all released their AI, national AI strategies. And we're looking a way to sort of monitor the strength and development of AI ecosystems. So we looked at US versus China, Germany versus France. We looked at the UK and Canada, Singapore, and so on. And got really into the engine room of measuring something quite difficult as AI development and deployment. And we began to get requests from businesses that were expressing a need for something similar, as in, we are investing heavily in AI. We don't know how we're performing against our peers. And we are very keen to see if you could build a benchmark that would give us that insight. So we set up Evident to meet that demand and create the first global standard benchmark on AI adoption, which we released last January for the banking sector to begin with. We did that not only to try and create more transparency in how businesses are adopting and what is the strength of a business AI ecosystem to deliver value at the end of the day. But also with any ranking, it does sort of focus the mind and it does provide that comparative assessment of where you as a business sit vis-a-vis your peers. And it also gives you a bit of insight. What are your peers doing? And for maybe those businesses that are embarking on an AI strategy and thinking about investing in this, like most businesses are today, being able to look at the leaders in the index to see what does good look like. What does an AI mature business do? How have they organized themselves? What is the sequence of investments that go into this? And how can we learn from that? So they're the early adopters and then the sort of the second movers. And the second movers have that, that advantage now to be able to look at sort of what works. So the way that we set about doing that was looking at what is the ecosystem of a bank and what is AI capabilities of a bank, but it could be actually in any sector. And what we do is that we mine millions of data points that funnel into just about sort of 125 indicators per company that fall into four pillars that make up that ecosystem of AI. We look at talent, We look at the whole talent stack of a business. We look at the innovation spend and investment and the entire innovation stack. We look at the operating model and also sort of the leadership and what they're doing, because that's actually quite important in AI adoption. And then lastly, we look at the transparency of responsible AI. So A, you want to try and foster an acceleration of AI implementation, but also make sure that it's done safely. So those are the components that we look at. As I said, we started with the banking sector, as they'd been investing for a while in AI, and going from this experimentation phase to an implementation at scale, and really starting to look at what's the return on investment, hence really wanting to see how are my peers doing and how am I doing compared to them. But we're going to be moving beyond the banking sector and insurance this year. And we're going to be looking at beyond banking and insurance into telecommunications, manufacturing, pharma, and so on in the next year or two.
I'm really interested to pick up on one of the points you just made there, that because one of the topics that's talked a lot, and we did a CIO roundtable or CXO roundtable recently, there were CEOs, CTOs, CIOs, you know, chief product officers and various different people there. The transparency, because one of the things they picked up on was AI for good, and that's become a term that a lot of people are talking about. So that you mentioned transparency for responsible AI. Could you just unpick that a little bit for us?
Absolutely.
Interesting topic.
I mean, it's a very nascent area of reporting, I would say, for most businesses. But what we do track is what is made visible by, and in this case, the bank, a bank. Banks are heavily regulated, so there's so much going on behind the scenes in terms of oversight of models that are being put into production, first and second and third lines of defense, and then submitting to regulators and testing to make sure that there's no bias and to have crack open the box and make sure there's a certain amount of explainability or capability to explain what the models are doing. Yep. But what we do track is that what are banks doing above and beyond that? How visible is their responsible AI units? What principles and factors are banks making visible that they're signing up to? And what sort of innovation, and some banks are sort of going into also the innovation side in terms of how can we, with Gen AI, for example, build tools that makes the explainability of the models more clear or available, because that is something that will be required at some point by the regulators. So it's sort of being on the front foot of that. So we don't weight that pillar heavily. It only weighs 10% in our index, but it's there as a marker to say, look, there is a push from your customers and also from your shareholders to see that while you're accelerating your AI implementation, that it's also done in a responsible manner. And we do see a correlation between the very AI mature banks and how visible and vocal they are about implementing it in a responsible way.
Now, that's brilliant, because like I said, it's such a topic in the transparency bit, and there's a lot of optimism and a lot of fear, you know, in equal measure discussed around the whole world of AI. What are your thoughts around the pace of AI adoption? Is it too fast? Is it too slow? Is it just right? You know, there's a lot of frustration out there, and there's a lot of angst, and there's a lot of, like I say, I just mentioned a moment ago, fear. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are really sort of three swim lanes in this debate. One is the fear of AI, sort of voiced very much by the cohort that talks about existential risk. And we've seen the response of that by regulators. The White House has had many roundtables with the big tech developers talking about the question of existential risk and how we put guardrails around that. And the UK last year had the UK AI Safety Summit, which was trying to address the similar sort of questions around where is this going long term, the existential crisis that it might that AI development might lead to if we lose control of AI, and that it develops to a point where it is actioning things that go against sort of humanity, and that's sort of the core of the existential risk argument. And then there's sort of the optimists, where it's all going to be great. We should just barrel down the road of AI adoption and development on the front end. The quicker we get to AGI, the better, because it's whatever problems there might be with AI, AI will probably have a solution for it. So we should just go at it as fast as we can. And then there's sort of the middle ground, which is the sort of the realists and actually the businesses and the people who are, you know, day after day trying to implement the AI as it's developing in their businesses. And this will be any sector, you know, in that out there, which is whether it's banking or telcos or insurance or manufacturing, everyone's grappling with, well, actually, how do we implement this? How do we implement and how do we make our company nimble enough to sort of consider what's emerging on the front end of innovation in AI, and how do we take that and implement it and make it something that our business can use and something that can give us the return on investment, uplift, you know, greater market share, and so on. So there are these three swim lanes. I think that regulators are probably focusing too much on the long term, because our day-to-day is talking to the businesses that are implementing it here and now. And I think would welcome some clarity on what to do today. And in the absence of regulation today on the adoption that's taking place right here and now, businesses are setting their own guardrails and own parameters. So in fact, you know, the banks are thinking about, well, with absence regulation, what can we do? How can we create the best practices? How can we make sure that we implement it safely? Obviously, with our bottom lines in mind, but how do we do it in a safe manner that doesn't compromise our customers or make decisions that are biased or unfair? So the sectors are setting, you know, the guardrails around it right now in the absence of the regulation. So the fear, you know, it has it, it, and then it has another factor, which is the concern around what's going to happen to our jobs. What is the economy going to look like going forward? How is the macroeconomy going to be impacted? And then questions around access and inequality, and is it going to bifurcate the world in those that are able and can afford to adopt AI? Is it going to be made available for the developing world? And so you've got that bifurcation happening too. So there are a lot of concerns, and rightly so. We don't have the answers, and it's not a non-zero risk that it can end, you know, being problematic in the future. But that's sort of currently where the debate is. But where we sit is sort of very much in that sort of realist camp around, yes, it's accelerating at speed, but right now we're looking at what is actually implementable and looking at what are the challenges and opportunities in AI implementation right now.
And it's interesting you mentioned the implementation and the sort of the adoption there, because you know, there's companies that are popping up in various different places. You know, we had this roundtable I mentioned earlier. One of those companies is a company called Brightbeam. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're based out of Ireland. Interesting organization. Their whole ideology is helping companies move from proof of concept into production, because that's where they see is the biggest gap and moving the needle in terms of AI accuracy. What are you seeing as like one of the main barriers to sort of AI adoption? Is it that, and what's stopping people moving from the nice idea to actually something of business value?
Yeah, I think so. The two questions in this: one is AI, sort of traditional AI, and you're looking at traditional machine learning and so on, that has been used by, and I'm talking about the banks here, but also by many other companies, has been used for many years and being implemented on the trading side and on the fraud detection and in the cybersecurity space. And then you've got Gen AI. And Gen AI is a sort of a different can of worms, right? Because there is that is not so linear, right? It's a knowledge management and tool, right? It's a large language model that can consume enormous amounts of you know, inputs to generate a summary, or it can sort of help you do some tasks easier. But it is also it's opening up a lot of new use cases. And in banks, for example, there are use cases on traditional AI that are, you know, are moving forward, tried and tested, where you're looking at sort of model development, and you can do more and more with bigger data sets and more sophisticated algorithms in use cases that are sort of in a universe that's quite well known. And of course, there's constantly more doors that open, and the sophistication allows for more capabilities in making a decision on a trade or not to trade, or loan or not to loan. And then and also to up the speed. And then you've got Gen AI, which suddenly opens this universe of different kinds of use cases, right? You've got everything from knowledge management to comms and marketings and sales, and basically anywhere, you know, and in banking, in the banking world, it would be in the investment banking team that might be needing to look through thousands of documents of, you know, legal documents, and be able to sort of have a tool that can summarize that, right? So those use cases that has been up until now done manually, and now that there's a tool for that that wasn't, that didn't exist before. So what we're seeing is that, and I completely agree with you on your observations on this, moving from ideation to production is very complicated, especially with Gen AI, because one thing is to surface the use cases where Gen AI can be of use, where it can give some upside in terms of either productivity gains, or, you know, and that's all the sort of time saved, and where it might also add to some revenue uplift. And those use cases are being identified. But actually, we're, you know, most banks are now in that experimentation phase and looking at, well, what can we actually, is our data in the right place? Do we have the rails on which that we can run Gen AI tools on? What kind of error factors are they? Is it accurate enough for us to use? How much of a human in the loop do we need? And then there's also the cost side. Do we use OpenAI, which is quite expensive? Do we go with a Mistral? Do we go with a Llama 2 or Falcon? What tools are good for our specific use case? And that is not a that's not uncomplicated, and it takes time. So you've got to look at that particular use case. What is the tool that is best equipped for that use case? And are we okay that it's OpenAI and our data might go out into the open? Do we need something that's on our private platform? All of these questions come up. And then there's a question of, even when you've made that decision, moving it into production, how do we do that? How do we refine the model? How do we get our people trained to use it? Because you might build it, but there might not be much uptake because people are like, wow, it's too much of a faff. It's easier for me to do as I did before. And so there's also that training of getting people used to using it. And some cases you're seeing, you know, really great outcomes. And in some you're seeing, you know, below what was the expected outcome in terms of, for example, productivity gains. And then you go back to the drawing board in terms of, is it because of the data wasn't good enough? So there's a constant testing and trial and error going on right now. So I think the reason we haven't seen many announcements of Gen AI use cases actually in production is because everyone's taking, you know, working at pace behind the scenes to figure out, you know, what are our use cases, what are the right tools to use, what refinements do we need to work on internally before we can announce use cases. But I think there's going to be a while before we see, you know, many use cases in announcement, probably not until next year. And then again, before we see a sort of a full return, sort of assessment of return on investment, is going to take maybe another 2 years. And then there's maybe a step change once the errors and the hallucinations are weeded out or it been fixed in some way, that we will see then the experimentation of putting this into production in a fully automated manner where there's no human in the loop. So that's the journey that most businesses are on right now. And it's harder, it takes longer time. And the question is also just how much will businesses have the appetite to keep investing in this if the ROI is not clear in a sort of a relatively manageable timeframe. So I think that concern of sort of hearing some voices out there talking about an AI winter, I don't think there is an AI winter in terms of development, but there could be a little bit of a frostbite in terms of AI deployment, because we're, you know, businesses are hitting this wall right now.
An AI frostbite. I love that. That's going to be my soundbite coming out today. But I think it's interesting. You mentioned a couple of terms there, which I'm trying to grapple with, and I'm it's new territory for me listening to the you know to people talk about AI hallucinations and AI bias, because as was pointed out to me by you know a few people, is AI will return you an answer that, as far as it's concerned, it's the answer that you asked for, but. How are you witnessing businesses overcoming the AI hallucination, AI bias, and how are they overcoming that, and how are they increasing the accuracy? Are you seeing that? Are you witnessing that, or is it still up for discussion in terms of how to overcome those two big issues?
Well, I mean, I think there are two issues. One is coming up with inaccuracies because the data feeding it is not good enough, so that loops back to, do we have our data tagged and filed in the right way in order to run Gen AI on it that can then give accurate, you know, responses? That's one. And so that's a constant loop that, you know, a lot of businesses are grappling with, and getting the you know, resources out there and vendors that are helping going in to streamline that data, getting it properly tagged and therefore returning much better responses. And that's certainly happening, and the accuracy is being, you know, is increasing when it's a question of the sort of just data fragmented data sets, or data sets that are not labeled and tagged correctly. And then you've got the other part, which is that it just can throw back some responses that are completely inaccurate. Like it can come up with an article that never existed, or link to things that come up with a response that is completely sort of, you know, inaccurate in every single way, and that's a sort of a bigger problem, right? Because that is if you're running the Gen AI on sort of third party data sources or sort of outside data that throws you back something that's data you can't correct, but that's something that the platforms and the businesses that are developing large language models are constantly looking to refine that accuracy rate and getting it up from 75 to 80 to 82%. And I think the question really is, can you use these tools for fully automated, no human in the loop, that touches the customers at less than 100%? And I think that's where, you know, businesses are waiting to see when will the large language models become more accurate, and so they can start to think about using it in an automated fashion. And if it's not ever going to get to 100%, which is likely that it won't, you know, what are the ways in which that businesses can address those hallucinations?
No, excellent. I suppose to round off, looking at it from a positive lens, so looking through the eyes of the, you know, AI future and the positive, what do you believe is sort of the big opportunity with AI? And by that, how will it improve people's lives? Any thoughts on that?
I think there's this big debate between you know, those who believe that AI will take jobs and create this, as I was talking about before, this inequality, that there will be fewer jobs out there, that we're going to enter a world where job scarcity, governments that don't step in and support people who will be without work and not able to upskill them or provide some kind of a base for their life, that was sort of going into very sort of dark times with AI sort of running rampant, and on the sort of also the disinformation, misinformation side, that can really be detrimental to democracies and erosion of jobs and so on. And I think the disinformation, misinformation is obviously very real, right? But that actually is not, and AI is only going to scale that and make that worse. But we are, and have been for a very long time, faced with disinformation and misinformation that has already, you know, back in 2016 and even before, created some real issues in the democratic processes and the outcomes of elections. And so AI is just going to put fuel to that fire. So we've got to sort of grapple with what we do there. In terms of jobs, then there's the sort of those who believe that it really is going to mainly augment and support us as in all the tasks that we do. It's going to make us more efficient. It's going to take away some of the grunt work that we're dealing with every day and augment rather than replace. We're going to go into a period now of agents. So you have your AI agent, and that AI agent can help you with so many things that you spend a lot of time doing, whether it be for your work or whether it be sort of just life in general. The AI agent knows your moves and your preferences, and you'll be able to set it a task that it can actually action. And so we're probably going to go into a period probably quite soon where you can say, I want to do X, Y, and Z, and then the AI will set it in motion and book it in your calendar and book the tickets or perform a task. So that is in my view, likely where they're going to end in, move towards AIs that can actually perform in the beginning, sort of rudimentary tasks, and then begin to become more and more sophisticated. But and so that's where I think this AI future is going to land. If you look back, any technological change has always led to some fear, but then always economic growth, and actually led to more jobs, not less. It's just very hard to see at the sort of the foothills of a technological step change where those jobs will be. But I think if we look at history and technological change, there's no, in my view, no doubt that we're going to be in a period in the future with higher growth and more jobs. We just don't know what those jobs are yet.
Fantastic. Alexandra, it's been an absolute delight talking to you today and hearing your insights. Thank you so much for giving me some time. I hope we get to talk again in the future, and perhaps you can be one of the speakers at one of our events going forward. But for now, I wish you all the very best, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Philip.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the Talent Smart podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We're always keen to hear your feedback. Please let us know your thoughts and what episodes and what topics you'd like to hear us cover in the future. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We're keen to hear from you. Please let us know your thoughts and if you'd like to take part in future episodes.